B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no-good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Held in by Krug, fires, and this one sails off a leg to the far corner. The Blues on it with nine. Rimmed around to the near side. No icing here. The St. Louis Blues, for the first time in franchise history, 51 seasons, have won the Stanley Cup. Your final here in seven games of the Stanley Cup final. Blues 4, Bruins 1. They win the series 4-3, and they will hoist Lord Stanley in 2019.
All right, back to your phones as promised. Bruce in Hanson, your thoughts on the series?
Hey, guys. How you doing? You touched on something going into Game 6, I believe it was, and that was we are all more comfortable with the Bruins on a power play, and we are all more comfortable with the Bruins on a penalty kill because St. Louis has to slow down play. Now, when they're 5-on-5, that's when the Bruins have trouble. What happened last night? The refs. They kept the whistles out of their mouths. They let them play the game, and I think that hurt the Bruins.
No question. It was a 5-on-5 game. This is why, again, my only surprise is the number of fans who were super confident yesterday. I don't have a problem with you picking the Bruins on one side or the other, again, because predictions are predictions. We all have them. We're all wrong. They're, you know, whatever. No one's right about anything when it comes to predictions. But I felt too many people just didn't pay attention to the six games. The six full games of hockey, 2 weeks of hockey, you had to look at the Blues and the Bruins. And I don't know how you could have been super confident in the Bruins, knowing that they did not own 5-on-5 play. They were not the better 5-on-5 team. And typically in those kind of games, the better 5-on-5 team prevails. Typically speaking, the edge goes to the 5-on-5 team for that very reason. The deeper you go in the series, the less whistles there tend to be. And I think the cleaner the game tends to be. What calls did they miss?
Yeah, last night I thought the game was pretty clean.
I'll tell you why, because the players stopped flopping around out there. Mm-hmm. The Bruins tried. Johansson had a bad flop on the side of the net when he got sort of sideswiped by someone with his mitt.
He did.
Boy, did he go down like he got shot. That was pretty silly. But for the most part, the players kept their skates more, and I think everyone just sort of is on their P's and Q's in Game 7.
Nobody's screwing around.
Nobody's messing around.
Yeah, that's right, because you know there's something big at stake, so you're not going to do anything stupid to take yourself out of a play. And the only penalty was an automatic.
St. Louis outscored you 5-on-5 in this series, 16-10. Well, what else do you need? You know, and going in, it was 12-10, so it's not a huge margin, but the margin was defined. St. Louis was better 5-on-5. And I think even in the games where the Bruins were underwater in penalties, it still benefits them because when the Blues go on the power play, I think the Blues are one of these teams. Like you were in 2011, where going on the power play almost kills your offensive momentum. Their forecheck game goes away because you don't forecheck on the power play, really. And it just, I think St. Louis, even when they're a man up, loses their rhythm. So whether you have more power plays or fewer power plays, just the fact that power plays are called and penalties are called benefits you, and you had none of that last night, and that absolutely hurt you.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Again, the power plays screw up the flow of the game, right, because it never ends up being 5-on-5. I'm telling you, that they were, of the teams that I watched, and I did, I watched some of the San Jose series and, you know, checked in on some of the early series with Columbus and Tampa, they were the best checking team in the playoffs. Holy crap, are they on you? Both directions. Like that back check O'Reilly made last night. Like they were on you all the time, every time.
Brendan in Pembroke. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, Maz, how you doing?
We're good. What do you got?
Felger, I can't stress enough. I don't know if you'll ever get it through your thick skull. Hey, Tuca was unreal these playoffs. He had 23 games where he gave us a chance to win. He brought us to the cup. And one game, yeah, bad night to have a bad game. He had no help. And I can't believe you're sitting there pointing out same save percentage as Binnington when he was unreal and he had the, you know, even better save percentage than him through six games. One bad game, you can't pin it on him. And I know you loved to watch him lose last night because that's what you do. You're a troll and you're a tool bag.
Okay. I think you're a six-year-old baby. Have I been unfair to Tuukka Rask today?
No.
Maybe I have, but I'll own it because, again, it was his worst game at the worst possible moment. And really, at your core, angry caller, and I can understand why you're angry today.
Preschool starts again tomorrow at 8 there, Timmy.
But again,
are you that surprised?
But again, this is just your classic case of the caller not actually listening. You know, they just hear one thing, and they, you know, and I get it. Not everybody listens to the whole thing, so they get five-minute snippet, and they think that that's what it is. And it's not what it is. Tuukka got outplayed in the last three games of the series. He did. Bennington was better in two of those final three games. Does that mean Tuukka sucks or he cost the Bruins the cup? No. Like, again, why can't both things be true?
I think you just sent that guy to, he's got his thumb in his mouth and his pacifier.
974 and 970 were Bennington save percentages in game 5 and 7. Games 5 and 7. He was a big reason the Blues won those games.
Brian in San Diego. Go ahead, Brian. Brian, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. You're on the air, please.
How you doing? So I want to talk about, we're talking about how Tuukka kind of blew it, or how Bennington won it. But I want to talk about how Tuukka blew it in the first period. Two goals scored on, what was it, six shots?
Four.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, Brian. Not exactly.
It's mind-blowing, isn't it? Yeah.
It was four.
Two goals, four shots. That can't happen.
Two goals on four shots. Sorry, that poor guy who called is going to be really upset at you, Jim. You troll.
Two goals and six shots. Four!
No, I wish it was six. John in the car. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Felge, you set me up perfectly for what I have to say. It's all Cassidy's fault, in my opinion. Early in the series, St. Louis figured out they're going to park a guy right in front of the net, and no one's going to move him out. We did nothing the entire series to move those guys out. Cassidy should have given a directive and said, look,
John,
O'Reilly's in front of the net. You cross-check him. Get him out of there. Take the penalty. They couldn't score on the power play. Take a penalty. Why are you afraid to take a damn penalty?
Okay, so I was going to ask you, what do you do to clear out someone who's bigger than you in front of the net? And you just said it. Okay,
cross-check.
So cross-check him. Take him out and take the penalty. I still don't know if that works. Is Colton Parayko going to move?
I think
Brad Marchand cross-checks him?
I think that the bigger issue was the Bruins on the other end with the size. You know, it wasn't. So he's talking about O'Reilly in front of the Bruins net. I think the bigger issue in terms of the moving was at the other end in front of Bennington. The Bruins couldn't get in there and they couldn't move those guys. So I don't know how you solve that one.
He was talking about in the offensive zone.
Yeah. Yeah, he said O'Reilly.
He wasn't talking about Riley. I thought he was mentioning O'Reilly coming down low.
No, no. He meant O'Reilly in the offensive zone.
So what, that goal last night?
Yeah, right. Right, but he was even high out.
That was way high.
He was high out on that one. And look, there were occasions in this series where the Bruins didn't clean up rebounds and guys swooped in, whether it was Tarasenko or O'Reilly, and now I'm going back into game four in St. Louis. But those guys did. They picked up rebounds in front of the net, and they were able to score. I think the Bruins, there were times where they addressed that. The bigger problem was at the other end.
You couldn't get in there. And there's nothing a coach can do about that. I'm sorry. Very little. The X's and O things in hockey is, it's just different.
So they got to find, to me, the going forward, the challenge for the Bruins now is, how do you address that on their first line? You got to get some size in there because you're going to get into the playoffs and you're going to run into another team with big defensemen and you're not going to be able to score with Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak. It's going to happen again. So you got to get some size on that line.
To me, the second guess with Cassidy is riding that first line too long when they clearly weren't on their game. And a couple of them were a flat-out mess. David Pastrnak was a flat-out mess in this series. And Marchand wasn't much better. And he rode him and rode him and rode him and rode him. And that, to me, is the only real second guess on Bruce Cassidy. Back to your phones right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston.
Sports.
I just want my name in the damn cup. That's what I want.
You know, it was so sweet to win, but it hurts to lose. I probably look back more on the loss and what I would do differently than the win. When you're that close and you watch another team celebrate and, you know, it should be you, it's a tough pill to swallow. That'll never leave you. It's going to haunt me.
Corrali wins the draw cleanly. Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final is underway. Sundquist gave it away. Out in front, Corrali shoots, blocked. Far point, Krug fires, blocked again. Corrali shoots, Binnington the save.
Edmondson had the first block, a big one that time.
It's free in the slot. Johansson a backhand, and a stop by Binnington. He dove out at him.
I thought he's been unbelievable since he came up here. It's a heck of a story.
Holmeister, slap shot, he scores! Ryan O'Reilly might have had a piece of it. Pietrangelo, he scores!
Here's Marchand. His man goes here. And what does Marchand do? He goes for the change. At least Pietrangelo absolutely wide open.
Yeah, I thought that guy was by himself.
That goal may have cost them the Stanley Cup.
Here's Tarasenko centering to Shin. He scores! Stick handle off the wall. He centers. They shoot. They score! Zach Sanford, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history.
It's a heartbreaker. They just took our dream, our lifetime dream from us.
It's devastation.
It just hurts. You know, I know it's going to hurt for a while.
It's hard to describe the disappointment.
It's an empty feeling. Someone had to win, someone had to lose, and we came out on the wrong side of it. It's not the way you picture it. It's as simple as that.
All right, Jimmy's look back at Game 7 last night. Bruins lose a cup at home. Tough, tough loss. That was a bad one. Murray, your second worst loss of all time as a Boston sports fan?
Yeah. It's behind Super Bowl 42, the loss to the Giants. That one I'll never get over, and it'll be a long time before I get over this one. It just feels like they had it, man. Like, I really thought this was set up for them. I think, like a lot of other people, and this would have cemented the legacy for so many great players on this team, like Chara and Bergeron. It would have gotten Rask off the schneid, and now we're back to that thing because I didn't think that he was good last night. I think he contributed to that loss. And so now there's the whole, you have to still doubt Tuukka Rask narrative. I think that is going to continue to exist. And I'm sorry, but rightfully so. And all that would have went away. And they would have been on their home ice for the first time ever in this building and holding up the cup. And
Will you ever get that chance in your lifetime again?
Probably not.
I mean, the last time you had a chance to do that, you even had an opportunity to do it, was 1970. Or 72 was in New York. Did you have a chance to clinch in 72 against the Rangers here? I don't know. 74, did you have a chance? But you're talking a lifetime. You're talking a generation. How rare that is to dance around on the garden ice with the cup. Oh, that is tough. Murray mentions the legacy. If this is it, what is the legacy of this group?
Hardworking, good team.
Good, not great.
Right. Yeah.
Good, not great.
Yeah. I think that's basically it. Good, not great. They won a title. They could have had another one. They blew it. Like, I think that's how it'll go down. I'm a big believer in that second championship theory. You win one, you've had a good year, and a lot of teams can do that. You win two, you win multiples, and now you're great players.
It's a nice team. Nice little team.
Yeah, nice. And it's been a nice run. You could have been great.
But
you would have been talked about like the Penguins, like the Blackhawks of the last decade or so. And now not.
Not special. Nothing special.
No. I mean, look, there were certain guys on this team that warrant your affection and respect. And you say, you know, Zdeno Chara, good pro. Patrice Bergeron, good pro. Like, those guys for sure. But we said this going in. I don't know how you can change it now just because they lost. The stakes were huge. To get two cups and the only one you lose to be to the Blackhawks? Well, you look at it and say, man, they were pretty good. They were almost right there with the Penguins and the Blackhawks in that era.
And sometimes, as a fan, you connect more with a team for whatever reason, the way that they play, their style, whatever certain players. Like, I loved the 14 Patriots. I loved the 06 Patriots. I loved this Bruins team this year, and it feels like a personal hurt. And I know I'm not alone there. Like, this sucks.
No, they were a likable team this year. They were. And really for a couple of years now, but this year, some things fell right. You know, some of the younger guys developed, and it was there, man. It was there.
Okay, back to your thoughts as promised. Martin on Cape Cod. Go ahead, Martin.
I don't think using the Carolina Hurricanes as a tune-up to the Stanley Cup Finals helped the Bruins' mindset in any way, or the fans either, for that matter.
So, Martin, I think that's interesting. The fans, maybe, you know, fans got carried away with themselves. But that's, you know, really not germane to losing the cup. Did it help or hurt the Bruins? I don't know how it helped, but I'll say this again. You won game one of the final, and you were up 2-1. So I understand there's going to be a hangover from that long layoff from Carolina to St. Louis, and maybe the step up in talent from Carolina to St. Louis, and just all the, you know, I don't think having an easy sweep in the conference finals helps you in the finals. But after you win game one and then go up 2-1, and now you're a week and a half into the series, I'm sorry, all that should be done. Like, I think you survived that. You survived the sweep of the Hurricanes and the layoff and all that stuff. Then you ended up, once you got into the rhythm and up to speed and everything was equal in the final, you lost 3 of the last 4. So, no, I mean, I take away that excuse of the Carolina Hurricane sweep.
Yeah. And
you survived it.
No, they got through the worst part of that, which was the layoff. And look, the other thing is, I don't know, you know, did the 11 days off help Bergeron, give him more Kachara, like some of the Krejci, the older guys?
It could have been even worse, right? Maybe. Bill in Rhode Island on Tuukka Rask. Yes, Bill.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say that I thought the play of Tuukka was a little questionable. There was something that you said during game six of the tournament here, of the Stanley Cup Finals, where you mentioned with Amonte on the broadcast that he wasn't leaving his net to play the puck.
Yeah.
I noticed that a lot from him last night, and I thought that it was more of a mindset for this game, that if they had played like game six, instead of playing it open, freewheeling, trying to score right away, I thought if they played more of a defensive-based game, they would have had a better chance. They played better in game six. Once they realized they got to the 15-minute mark and didn't score, then you started seeing guys missing assignments and those types of things, and you see the puck go in the net, and then Marchand does it again, game over.
Okay, Maz is nodding his head.
Because I think that's what happened. I felt the same way watching the game. I thought coming out of the gate, the Bruins were doing what they did in game six. Their forwards were getting down low. They were adhering to the same game plan. I thought it was there. And then they started to get pressure, and I think they get out of their structure a little bit because they said we can score. So the caller said they got frustrated because they didn't score. I think it's because they smelled the opportunity to score, and so they get a little more aggressive, and they gave it up on the other end.
Well, certainly on that second goal. No question about it.
I mean, that's what I think happened.
Long shift, defenseman pinches, Marchand's left back there. He's screwing around back there with his line change. That's definitely what happened on the second goal.
I mean, and on the first one, I think after all, you know, I think they were a little demoralized. You know, Binnington was standing on his head, making some stops. They're pressuring, they're carrying the play, and all of a sudden it comes down the other end. There's a deflection that goes through Tuukka's legs. So I didn't see this last night. I was just watching a replay a little while ago. It looks like a couple of guys kind of throw their heads back. Like, oh, God. And, you know, I think that is what happened. I think it took the air out of them.
Oh, they know. We all knew.
The important, because
first goal was everything in this series.
Right, and you know they were emphasizing it. So they're going, we got to get the first one. They're putting the pressure on. Bennington's keeping everything out of the net. Somehow, some way, all of a sudden it goes the other way, deflection, goal. And they're like, you got to be kidding me. And they knew what it meant.
And you don't let Rask off the hook on that one?
On the first goal?
Yep.
No, I don't. I don't. I'm sorry.
Again, I certainly don't.
I know it was a deflection, but it went through his legs. Earlier in the playoffs, it was a play like that. He had the stick down, and the stick stopped the puck. This time, the stick wasn't there, and the opening was big. So, like, I'm not telling you it's 100% on the goalie. I'm just telling you that Rask earlier in the playoffs stopped it.
He's complicit in it, and that's what it is. He had set a standard of play up until that moment. And he had made stops like that before. Last night, he didn't.
He's not the reason they lost. Nobody in their right mind would say that. But the fact is that last night, they needed him to be better than he was. And he wasn't. Now, would they have lost the game anyway? Probably. Because they didn't score. But they needed him to be better than he was. And it was one of his worst games of the playoffs.
Here comes Murray's update, and we're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Tony. Do the Bruins choke? I think so. I just thought that this was their series to have. I think they lost it when they lost games 4 and 5 back-to-back. I think so, that's where they lost the series. Obviously, they're great going into St. Louis, winning game 6, but they just spent too much gas. They got worn down. And they were the better team. You look at it on paper, they got the better goalie. I like their D a little bit better because they're mobile.
You like the Bruins' D better than
I like the mobility.
Do you think the Blues even lose the defense battle to the Bruins? So the Bruins are definitely better in net. You think they're better on defense, and I would think the Bruins are better at the forward group, too, the depth of the forwards, yes?
Yeah.
So this is a massive choke in your mind.
I just think that they were the better team. They should have won this series. And I think when they go back and look at this in a couple weeks, they're going to say, wow, we really blew a great opportunity here to put another Stanley Cup on our resume.
Tony Amonte last night with me on the NBC Sports Boston postgame show. Bruins choked. Do you agree?
Not entirely, no. Because I thought the thing was going to be a tractor pull from the beginning. So don't go by me. But yeah. I will say that last night when they got behind, they got tight. And to me, that's what choking is.
So
that when you're under pressure, you get tight and you can't perform.
To me, choking is vastly underperforming. And when I look at a choke, I think their first line choked. Their first line choked, Maz. I'm sorry. Marchand, Pastrnak, Bergeron.
Don't forget Krejci. I know he's not on that line. You can add him there, too.
Put him on the list. When those four combine for one even strength goal, one, that's a choke. You want to say St. Louis is tough defensively. They match up well with you. Those D are shut down D. Fine. In that case, all things being equal, if the first line and Krejci are performing at their optimum level, they have maybe 5 goals in 7 games, or 4 goals in 7 games. Or they helped win you a couple and got shut out a couple, but it all averages out where they made some impact, but not a full impact because they're facing a tough competition. Then that's just a loss. When you go basically donuts, that's a choke. Brad Marchand last night choked. He choked on that power play shot attempt. He choked on that line change. He choked. And David Pastrnak, I don't know if it's a choke or something else, but he was stumbling around out there like a buffoon for much of that series. I don't know if that's a choke or something else, but I do think they choked. So Amonte says the Bruins are better goalie, defense, and forward. Do you agree with the defensive part of it?
No.
Me neither.
No, from the beginning of the series, I didn't agree with that. St. Louis has better D than you.
So we cut out a middle part. I just cut out a middle part there for the rejoin. But I sort of stopped Tony there, and we argued about it for a little bit. Just listen to what he said.
I mean, I'll break with you there. Give me Parayko. Give me all those guys.
Torrey Krug is a top D-man.
Krug than Colton Parayko?
Yes.
No.
In today's game,
no.
In the way they call the games now, Charlie McAvoy. I'd take him over Parayko.
I think Pareko's the first defenseman off the board. I mean, they just won. How can you say you take those skilled, the more mobile D when it was the other style? That
was
won?
He a huge factor in the series?
Defensively, yes. He's such a big factor that we don't see. You know, he's shut. He was out there against that first line most of the time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. You know, and that's his job. He's a top D man for them, along with Pietrangelo and Bouwmeester. They've got a pretty good core there. Yes, they're big. Yes, they're strong. Are they super mobile?
No.
I just don't think Parayko is the guy that can really turn, pivot. It, skate and do it all that like a Norris Trophy defenseman does.
Okay, so I see his point there.
Sure,
they don't have a Drew Doughty, a Erik Karlsson, a Brent Burns, guys who can all three zones, dynamic puck movers, that sort of thing. They don't. I'm still taking Colton Parayko over any other defenseman in this series.
I mean, he's a force in his own zone,
and he's 26.
Yeah, and look again, I compare him loosely to what Chara was in 2011. I mean, he's got that ridiculous reach. He's strong. You can't move him. Was Chara a great puck mover and a great offensive player who controlled all three zones?
Of course not.
No. Now he scored on the power play and did things like that, and I think Parayko's done some of that too. But in his zone, he controls it. I mean, he just dominates the space.
And Pietrangelo in this series was terrific.
Dynamite.
So
he honestly, I thought there was a chance he was going to be the Conn Smythe last night.
You know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but yesterday when I asked you guys what scares you most about the Blues going into this game, I said O'Reilly and Pietrangelo, 1-2, and they scored your first two goals, and one was the Conn Smythe, and I wouldn't be surprised if Pietrangelo was second in the voting, honestly. Honestly, although Binnington, you know,
with the way he finished the series, he crept back into it.
He walks in here and almost shuts you out in Game 7 like Tim Thomas in 2011. Maybe if that last goal doesn't go in, he does get it.
I mean, Game 5 was 2-1. Game 6 was 4-1. The Bruins were down 2-0 and 4-0.
I heard the term gentleman shutout on Jones last night. Yeah. I thought that was pretty appropriate.
I mean, look, again, I'm not a Binnington guy. If you were to ask me right now, like if I were the Blues, I'd trade him. I'd get something great. You know what I'm
sell high. Yeah.
Sell high is the point. I'm not saying you should actually trade him, but you know what I mean. His value right now is astonishingly high, and you could get a lot for a guy like that because I don't think he's that good. But in games 5 and 7, he was a huge factor in those games.
Well, that decision could be coming for him. He's an RFA. So,
all right, back to you guys. Joe in the car on the Bruins and Binnington. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I think Mike, one of the problems last night, the Bruins were trying to shoot through the five hole, and he had a stick down, and they should have went up top. I don't understand what they were trying to go between the five hole. I think they should have went up. They missed.
Okay, it's a fair point. Krejci got stopped five hole, trying to go backhand five hole. Johansson got stopped, trying to go backhand five hole. Nordstrom couldn't get it up on that rebound in the third period. Clear, easy. I don't want to say easy scoring chance, but good Lord. Just lift the puck a little bit, and you got yourself a goal. So I think the Bruins definitely played into Binnington's hands. There's no question they helped him along.
I felt like they didn't go stick side enough last night. That's during the game, I remember him snatching stuff out of the air, and I remember thinking, what are you shooting it over there for? That feels like the one spot he's been okay, for crying out loud. You know, and I get the five-hole thing, but the stick side, that seven-hole, he was vulnerable there the whole playoffs.
Bert in the car. Go ahead, Bert.
Hey, I'm just curious. So they've got an 82-game season. They switch off almost every single game with their goalies. What changes in the postseason that makes them thinking one goalie is going to be good for the whole run when they have one of the best records in the league?
Yeah, but
by using two.
One goalie was good for pretty much the whole run, wasn't he?
But, what happened last year? The same thing. They stuck with one goalie, and it kind of peters out towards the end. If he's getting tired, wouldn't it be better to keep two guys fresh the whole run?
Yeah, I don't think Rask got tired. So I do not think they should have platooned Rask and Halak in the playoffs. You had the best playoff goaltender as it was, and he played every night. So that's not the issue. It's on Rask to play a little better at the end. I don't think he was gassed. I think a bigger picture question is, given what you just saw St. Louis do with an average goaltender and the salary constraints and the salary cap, you can go back and ask, is it worth having a top three paid goalie? And that's not this is kind of a separate topic than do you believe in Rask or not? Even if you believe in Rask, is it worth that? Are there other ways to win? Are you better off having a better defensive core than spreading that money out in front of the goalie and just making do with a good but not elite or highly paid goalie?
Well, that's where I thought that call was going to go. Like, switch goalies. I thought it meant long-term, not in the playoffs. Because Rask played too well to take him out. I mean, that's just, that's revisionist history to me. But the idea going forward, I don't know. We talk about ways the Bruins can free up salary cap space. They have some issues. You know, and I don't know a ton about Daniel Vladar down at Providence or wherever, but you do have Halak under contract for another year. As much as Binnington's stock is high, Tuukka's stock right now is right back up high again. He was awesome in this post. He was the best goalie in the playoffs. I mean, if you were the Bruins, is this the time you explore to trade him and get something back and go another direction in goal?
So just I just did this really quickly. I'm just going to do this on the top of my head. The last five Stanley Cup winners. Last year, Braden Holtby makes $6 million. The 2 years before that is Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. Matt Murray makes $3.75 million. The year before that is at the Blackhawks. Corey Crawford makes $6 million. The Kings, Jonathan Quick makes $5.8 million. All right, so all those guys make less than Tuukka Rask at $7 million. This is not arguing whether they're better or not. I'm just saying, can you get away with a little less money at that position and still win championships? And I think the answer is yes. I mean, whether you believe in him or not.
Well, particularly if you have a good decor.
Right. And I think the St. Louis Blues are a wonderful sort of example of those great defensemen. To me, is almost, if you've got a great decor, that I would not spend on a goalie. I just wouldn't. Now, the Bruins don't have that great decor yet, but that's, you know, that's another way to build a team, another way to skin a cat. We get you some, which I thought, and I, we did this earlier, and I'll do it again because I think it's telling and interesting. The reaction of the Bruins, players and coaches last night after the game. If you think these guys don't care, listen to this stuff and then tell me how you feel right after these words.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, guys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Coach, just what are the emotions like right now?
I don't know. You know, it's an empty feeling. It's a long year. Someone had to win, someone had to lose, and we came out on the wrong side of it. It's not the way you picture it. It's as simple as that, so...
All right, so that's Bruce Cassidy after the game. I played you some of this earlier and want to do it again because, I don't know. I think it's interesting. Again, I know most of you turn the TV off immediately. Immediately after the game, if not sooner. Murray stormed out of the stadium in a huff after the second period, correct?
That is correct.
Jimmy, did you turn off the TV somewhere in the third period?
Third goal, remote went flying to the floor, and I went to bed.
Maz, you stuck it out like a man?
Oh, no, I stuck it out. I even watched a little bit of the cup ceremony, just a little.
It's very big of you.
Just a little, but the post game I had no interest in. I was done.
So I don't know if I would have made it. I was working. I had to do the post game. So I heard a lot of this stuff at the time. And I find it telling. That's why we're going to play it for you. But I don't blame you if you missed it, because that was a tough one. That one leaves a mark. That's when you chuck the remote and chuck the TV out the window and go back to what you were doing. But I know what it left, what kind of mark it left on the fans, and I know fans a lot of times get frustrated when they think and believe, and are often right, that you care more than the players do. The loss hurts you more than these guys, and I think that there's certainly some cases where that matters. I don't think this is the case with the Bruins. As I was watching and I was doing our post-game show on NBC Sports Boston, these guys were in tears. These grown men, these grown-ass men were in tears on the ice right after the game, and then even 15, 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, as they meet the media, they were in tears, choking up. And so I just want to play some examples of it and some post-game sound, the reaction in the locker room, what a scene that was in the Bruins locker room. Just start with Marchand. Jimmy, you have Marchand 1.
I love every guy on this team, and I'm very proud of everyone that worked their ass off all year to get to this point. And you know, we're a hell of a group. We came together. You know, we're like a family, so it hurts. You know, but yeah, love this group.
It's basically weeping. Marchand number 3, listen to this.
I mean, it's a heartbreaker. It's tough to describe. You know, they just took our dream, our lifetime dream from us. And, you know, everything we've worked for our entire lives. And it's 60 minutes away from that. I can't describe it.
One more quickly. Marchand 7, Jimmy.
Never get over this. I'm not over 13 yet. I'm sure it's more than that. It's not something you ever forget.
Okay, so I agree this was worse than 2013. 2013, you lost to a better team in a series I don't think you were going to win. And maybe they know it too. And this one you could have had, you should have had. And so I can see this one hurting more than 2013. It should hurt more than 2013. I like that Marchand cares.
He cares. I've never doubted that about him.
He clearly cares. I just wish he wouldn't play like such a jackass in some of these cases.
Well, so that's the thing. And this is why I find him frustrating, is because I feel like there's grit to his game and he should have been able to handle more of this physical play than he does. And maybe I'm not, you know, giving him enough credit for being able to do what he does as a little guy. But then beyond that, His mistakes are just brain locks. Like that one last night. It's 1-0 late in the first period. There's 10 seconds to go, and you're at your own blue line, and you go off for a change?
I mean, what?
And you allow the guy coming into the zone, Pietrangelo, to just sweep right in, pick up the puck, and flip it in the net.
So I think that's a choke. I think he loses his mind or loses his place or loses the composure. Or he's just gassed because he takes too long a shift.
So it could be that. That's a thing, and you hear a lot of criticisms of him from hockey people. Like, he doesn't come off the ice, and that's on him. But, the defensive responsibilities, remember, he screwed up earlier in the series against Tarasenko. He did a similar thing.
That's a great point.
He just peeled off and gave up on the play. And it could be because he's out there too long. Like, I don't rule that out. But those are killers.
So I appreciate the emotion and the care. But can you play a little more carefully? How about Zdeno Chara? It's always rattling to see a guy that big, at 42 years old, not be able to hold it in. He was weeping, too, in the postgame. Chara won.
Yeah, it's obviously not the result I want to have, for sure. It's hard to describe the disappointment. Yeah, it's just hard to find words right now.
Chara 3, Jimmy.
We bottle hard. It's such a tough moment to kind of reflect right after. But this group battled really hard all year long. We overcome some adversity, some challenges. Very proud of this team. There is for sure a lot of character in this room, and sure there is a bright future for this team.
Okay. The guy who's rattled the most was Charlie McAvoy. The dude could barely speak. Give me one, McAvoy.
Charlie, what's the emotion like when you get to within a game of what you've worked all season for and just to fall a little short?
Devastation,
one word. How about the follow-ups? Number two.
Charlie, the first 17 minutes, you guys really came out strong. Did you feel the game shift there in the final three of the first period?
How long do you think something like this will take to get ready?
Wow, long time.
Guy's freaking crying. I didn't listen to these earlier, Jimmy, so I'm just curious. Krejci 1 says won't get over this loss ever.
Well, obviously it hurts, but it just hurts. You know, I know it's gonna hurt for a while. Been there before, haven't got over it yet. So I don't think I'll ever get over this one either.
Is it? And I agree, hurting worse than 13. This is a worse loss in 2013.
I mean, this was a beatable opponent. You know, in 13, it was different. They weren't the favorites. This thing opened up for them. And the other thing is, I think they all know, right, that as a core, because Chara's obviously a big part of it, that this might have been their last crack as a group.
I don't think there's any question about it. Give me some Bergeron. How about Bergeron 3, Jimmy?
Really proud. I mean, we've... given everything we had, the character we've shown all year to get to this point has been amazing. And you know, how tight we are, or how much adversity we've battled through is amazing.
All right, that's not too depressing or anything, is it? Huh? Tough loss, Murray. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, again, that's why I stormed out after the second period. I wasn't sticking around for that. Watching the Blues trample around on that ice with that cup.
At least in this case, you don't have to listen to Kyrie Irving say, now is not the time to be disappointed.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's more to watch, guys. I want to watch. You know.
I'm looking forward to watching the Blues next year. Or, you know, no, these guys, it left a mark on these guys.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I don't know if that's any consolation. But
Kyrie's more interested in his Hollywood career. You know, these guys literally sacrifice their bodies to win, for crying out loud, which is why it hurts so much for them. They cared. I don't question that about them. I just, you know, some of the decision-making, like, oof, man.
Okay, back to your reaction to the Game 7 loss last night after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. text JASON to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.